It's Halloween, and who better to talk about in this time of year than a man who's certainly a reason for the season. Edgar Allan Poe is a figure shrouded in legend and a fair bit of mystery. But who is this famous Baltimore resident and founding father of American horror? Let's learn a little bit more about the legendary Master of the Macabre on Majestic Maryland. Poe and his siblings are born in Boston, with Edgar entering this world on January 19, 1809. Poe is the son of David Jr. Poe and Elizabeth Hopkins, both actors. Poe's birth father came from a military family, David's father being a financier and wagon builder for the Continental Army in the Revolutionary War. He was even praised by our good friend, the Marquise de Lafayette, for his services, who granted him the title of general. Edgar's life was destined to be tragic from the start. His father had abandoned Elizabeth before he was even born and would die shortly after his wife, around 1811. Elizabeth Hopkins passed away of tuberculosis when Poe was still a very young child. Tuberculosis was one of the biggest killers of the time, and this disease would wind up haunting Poe throughout his whole life. The Poe siblings were all separated to different foster families, with Edgar winding up in Richmond, Virginia, adopted by the Allen family. His foster family would be complicated. His adoptive mother, Frances, loved him like he was her own, the couple having no other children. She doted on him and introduced him to the world of literature. His adoptive father, John, however, had a respectful at best of times relation with his foster son. Edgar and his adopted family would spend a few years abroad in the United Kingdom, around 1816 to 1820. Upon returning to the States, Edgar took part in a youth brigade in Richmond. And this doesn't really have a whole lot to do with his career. The brigade's responsibility was to be an escort for the Marquise de Lafayette on his return tour of the country that he helped fight for. And, well, previous topic of this show. So, moving on. In 1825, Poe started at Virginia University. Poe was a diligent, if not broke, college student. And he was quite broke. His father refused to send him any financial aid to actually pay for his tuition, and Poe racked up quite a bit of debt trying to pay off his expenses. Gambling, the expensive pastime that it was not just a hobby of Poe's, but a necessity, which plunged him further into debt. Because of this, his time at University of Virginia was short. It's where he starts to take an interest in poetry, discovering the works of famous European authors like Lord Byron. He became well known amongst his fellow students for his prose, often being asked to recite well-known works and his own for classmates. But the aforementioned financial problems made him cut college short, and desperate for something more out of life, he left the university. From Richmond, he traveled back north to the city of his birth, Boston, probably hoping it would be too much of a trek for debt collectors. In Boston, a city full of patriotic pride, and he decided to enlist in the army. It's not likely he was inspired by his war hero grandfather to join, as he faked his name on the enlistment forms. May 1827, Poe starts his enlistment service at Fort Independence in Boston. His military career is relatively uninteresting. In the summer of that year, Poe would have his first collection of poems published. Under the moniker A Bostonian, a friend of his manages to print off 50 copies of his first collection of poems, Tamerlan, and other short poems. How many times did I just say poems? And they're all beautifully written, with daring structure, touching expressions of longing, and unfortunately, no one reads them at the time. But it's a start, right? Ironically, the first edition of these poems are considered some of the most valuable first editions ever printed amongst collectors, some having gone on auction for around $600,000, far more money than Poe would ever make in his lifetime. But he wasn't put off by a lack of sales, because he was going to be all he could be at West Point. Yes, the military academy. And actually the one good thing his foster father ever really did for Poe was to help him get into West Point. However, this is likely due to the passing of his foster mother, Frances, in February of 1829. John Allen was probably had his telltale heart softened and took pity on his foster son. I apologize for that. No, I don't. However, this didn't mark a change in the relation between Poe and Allen. Years later, on David Allen's deathbed, he would be visited by his foster son. Poe would witness his sickly foster father standing up with his arms outstretched, in an attempt to grab Poe and thrash him for daring to show his face ever again in his house. And that was the last time the two ever saw each other. West Point for Poe was, again, uneventful. Not really what he wanted, so he did anything he could to get kicked out, which he did. Of course, he didn't stop writing, and it is around this time in the late 1920s when Edgar Allan Poe starts to come into his own as a writer, beginning to work on more short stories over poems. He becomes heavily influenced by the movements of artistic expression happening across the pond in Europe, known as the Romantic movement. And to put it briefly, this was an art movement that focused on the expression of strong personal emotion that went into the works of artists. Artists and writers put emphasis on themes like nature, mythological figures, and the supernatural. And for our purposes, I like to point out that about a decade before Poe took up the pen, a lady named Mary Shelley wrote a little story called Frankenstein. And now, did Poe ever read Frankenstein? I don't know. Certainly, he probably would have been influenced by it, right? Poe's darker take on Romanticism, with its emphasis on the macabre and strange in his poems about longing for love from beyond the grave, would certainly fit in well with the Romantic movement in general. After he got himself kicked out of West Point, he made his way to Baltimore, Charm City, the city that reads, because that's all there is to do in 1830 for the most part. He moved in with his cousin Maria and her niece Virginia, two people he would be very fond of and not at all weird with. I mean, after we get past the fact that him and Virginia decided to get married, which even in this period was a bit weird, but not unheard of, and in their defense, historians generally don't know the true nature of their relationship, speculating that it was probably just platonic. So, just be cool about it, okay? For history's sake. Poe's days in Baltimore saw some of his lesser-known but more foundational stories becoming published, such as Metzingerstein, which was apparently too scary for most readers of the day. And it's a pretty good short story. Ancient blood feuds between rival clans, everyone dying in the end in a fiery glory. It could easily be an episode of Game of Thrones. Obviously, we nowadays heavily associate him with the city. He is everywhere. Sport teams, street art, he graces the label of bottles of craft beer appropriately enough. But things would all go south for Poe, literally, after a close friend of him landed him a job back in the city that had raised him. In 1835, he would return to Richmond to work at the Southern Literary Messenger. And he wouldn't return to Baltimore as a living resident, but he would keep the city in his heart and visit when he could. And his works would find themselves printed in a new upstart paper called The Baltimore Sun. Now, while at the press, he would be fired for drinking, return to Baltimore to marry his cousin, as mentioned earlier, return to Richmond, be rehired, make the Southern Literary Press a much better publication with his poems and scathing critique, something which at the time Poe was known for more than his stories. If you're a writer of any type in America, you better hope Mr. E.A. Poe likes your work, or he will call you some very wordy insults. And quite possibly a fraud and a plagiarist, if you're lucky. In 1837, Poe and his wife would move back north to the city of brotherly love, Philadelphia. This is where he finds the time to write, and write he does. The Telltale Heart, Mask of the Red Death, The Pit and the Pendulum, The Fall of the House of Usher. He even goes to invent the modern detective story with Murders in the Rue Morgue. In the Rue Morgue. Rue Morgue? Morgue? I don't know. But it's a story people go ape over. His Philly period is one of the more productive in terms of work we all know and love today. However, in 1842, his wife becomes very ill and all signs point to tuberculosis. From there, they move to a small cottage outside of the Bronx, as a writer of any era would, New York being just as much of a hotbed for creatives then as it is now. And Poe does whatever he can to make her final years comfortable. Poe's life in New York is just as steady for him as his time in Philly. He even attempts to start a publication of his own. He just isn't very successful at it. Then, 1845. This is when Poe writes probably his most famous poem and arguably the best known in the world to this day, The Raven, a poem of longing, despair, likely inspired by his wife's worsening condition. It captures people's minds with his outpouring of emotion and brooding sense of dread. But it's probably best known nowadays for the hundreds of references made to it in pop culture. Like in The Simpsons, for example, and it may be safe to say that most of us probably remember the Treehouse of Terror version of the poem more than any other. And of course, it is the name of Baltimore's football team, so... He didn't make much off the initial publication, around $15 in old-timey America money, but for a time it skyrocketed his name and prestige like never before. Poe is considered a household name from this point on, invited to lectures to talk about his work and give his opinion on writing and prose. Even when walking the streets of Philly or New York, children would stop him and caw at him. Because it's Edgar Allan Poe, that's what you do. Though not all was well. His wife's worsening condition caused him to drink more and led to him ruining a lot of professional connections at the time, as well as drained his mental state like never before. It was instances like this that people who reviled Poe would later use to spread rumors about the writer, both during his life and well after. Alcohol and Poe had a complicated relation. It wasn't that Poe drank a lot, but he got drunk easy and would use it as a crutch in times of despair during his life. Interestingly enough, his time in Baltimore, he was noted by peers for being sober and keeping well-dressed in the respect of a southern gentleman, which is how he played himself off. And he was praised for his work ethic. And when he returned to Richmond in the final years of his life, he even joined a temperance movement. Though this was in part to woo the heart of a lady he fancied, it still speaks for his resolve. And while it's fun to paint historical figures as living their work or being the character they put on paper, it's also important to remember that there are people who, like us, are complicated. The end of Edgar Allan Poe's life is a tragic story, and we really don't know all that much concerning what really happened. After 200 years, the details remain lost, and most of what we have is hearsay. But what happened in the months before the fateful October day is pretty well known. Poe was devastated when his wife passed away in January of 1847. His work at this point on gets a little more transcendent with his devastating poem, Ulalume, about a heartbroken man pining for his lost love while trying to stay grounded in reality and tragically failing and succumbing to his own grief. And Eureka, in which isn't really a poem, but it's also Poe's attempt at scientific literature. It's a very strange work in which Edgar Allan Poe decided that he needs to express his theory on how the universe was formed and its overall order. It's written from the perspective of two aliens, and it would be like if Stephen King decided to write a book on astrophysics, but it was also about a haunted house, or something. These are two of his last great works, and sadly when he published them, the reception was pretty poor from audiences. On September 27th, 1849, a very ill Edgar Allan Poe boards a ship headed to Baltimore, and well, we all know the story from here. No one hears from him for days until he is found on October 3rd, delirious on a street in Baltimore, or in a tavern. Either way, he is taken to Washington Hospital and dies on the 8th, and the doctor at the time announces his death as inflammation of the brain, which is almost 19th century shorthand for unknown causes. Poe's death is to this day a mystery. Some say he was kidnapped and left for dead by election fraudsters. Some say rabies. In the end, no one knows, and we probably never will. After his death, Poe's legacy would skyrocket, mostly thanks to a man named Rufus Griswold, a rival of Poe and a focus of the late author's criticism. He would try to ruin Poe's reputation after death, lauding that he was a drunk, a madman, and all kinds of other wonderful things that we associate with the persona of Edgar Allan Poe today. Except, well, no one remembers Griswold. The legacy of Edgar Allan Poe is that his stories, whether we're aware of them or not, are the foundation for all kinds of media that we enjoy up till this day. In the decades after his death, a British fellow named Conan Doyle would read Poe and write Sherlock Holmes. The twisted science fiction horror of H.P. Lovecraft wouldn't be so twisted and horrific if it wasn't for Poe's macabre imagery. So, what does all of this have to do with Maryland? Sadly, not much. But, and perhaps this is the bias of myself, Baltimore has embraced him in a very personal way. His image is all over town, and it is his final resting place after all. His grave at Westminster Church is something of a pilgrimage for lovers of the darker things in life to pay respect. And for the longest time, it was actually the subject of its own mystery, that of the Poe Toaster. A caped, masked individual who, for almost half a century, would appear at Poe's grave on the anniversary of his birthday, leave three roses on the tomb, one for Poe, Virginia, and for Poe's aunt, a glass of cognac, and then disappear into the night. A Baltimore tradition steeped in just as much mystery as the man himself. What I can say about all this, however, is, while there is beauty in life, there is also tragedy and darkness. So this Halloween, raise a glass of Amontillado to the master of the macabre, Mr. Edgar Allan Poe.